when I really started learning the character of Christ, I grew some resentment because he didn't look a thing like Jesus. But as I started learning, God kind of flipped it and wouldn't allow me to point fingers at him anymore, but look at myself. Hi, I'm Vanetta.
And I'm Curtis.
I'm his wife.
And I'm her husband.
I sing on the Purpose Worship Team. I'm also a group leader with the Gospel and Race Learning Group.
I'm on the Board of Trustees here. I also am a leader in the Gospel and Race Learning Group, and I'm the Contemporary Music Director.
We met in November of 1979, and at the time, I knew about God. And so because I did not have a cultivated relationship with God, I really didn't know how to love him. The problem is with whose terms do we live life on? If God is not put first, then somebody else will sit on that throne in your heart.
You can't place your spouse in a Jesus position. And it's also unfair to your spouse to do that because there's no way that I could be Jesus. I'm gonna fail. Jesus helped us find a better way to navigate by just making conditions so that we had to look at him. This is not about me, this is about we. You know, so we align with God, we're committed to God, we're committed to being committed to one another, mm-hmm. and that trumps everything else. When you're young and you mm-hmm. fall in love, you look at the outward beauty of someone. Oh, she's fine. Oh, he's so cute, he's so handsome.
He's tall.
Right? But there's one thing that always happens. Gravity is gonna pull some skin down, it's gonna pull some things. And so what we need to focus on is what the beauty inside of your spouse is. Ephesians 5:21 just simply says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. At first, see them through the eyes of Christ and you stand a better chance of surviving whatever is being thrown at you.
Welcome to Purpose Church, or welcome back to Purpose Church. My name is Eric, and this is my wife, Sarah, and I'm one of the pastors here, and we just want you to know we love you, and we're so glad that you're joining us today, but you got to know this more than anything, God loves you. Well, let's open our Bibles to the book of Genesis, and while you're flipping to the book of Genesis, I wanted to encourage you, as we're in the middle of this series, A Better Way, I want to encourage you to pick up our lead pastor's book, Pastor Glenn, his book, Biblical Antidotes. This is going to be an incredible companion read as we're working through this series, A Better Way, and we're continuing our series today where we're trying to discover together, how do we navigate hard stuff when Jesus leads, and what does that look like? And so today we're talking about, what does it look like when Jesus leads in a marriage? And so Sarah and I felt like the best way to start this would be to show you a picture of our wedding day. So this is Sarah and I on our wedding day almost 15 years ago. And I imagine as you're watching from home right now, maybe you're looking at that photo and you're probably thinking maybe two things. The first thing you're thinking is, was he 12 years old when they got married? And no, was it 12 years old? And maybe the second thing you're thinking is, what happened to his hair? Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say we've got four kids. Right. And so that's just a little bit of what happened.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it is so good to be with you, church. And we are so excited to talk about today how a biblical marriage is one broken husband and one broken wife helping each other become more like Christ. And before anybody thinks that we are up here because we have it all together, we don't have challenges in our marriage, I want to say that is not the truth. We are very different people and we are very broken people. And we are really differently broken. Mm-hmm. Anybody else in here married to someone that you're really different to? Or maybe there's someone in your life that you just don't see eye to eye on. Well, that is us. Mm-hmm. And a couple years ago, we got gifted Disneyland tickets. And I was so excited and I was planning it and I picked the outfits and I thought, this might be the only time we get to come here, so this has to be the best day ever. And the first few hours were pretty special and magical. And then a couple hours in, we lost our youngest child. And he was 3 years old at the time. He was only lost about 30 seconds, but it was a terrifying 30 seconds. And I was mad at Eric because I thought he should have him. He was mad at me. He thought I should have him. And so my heart rate is just up, up, up. And I'm holding holding his arm so tight. And as soon as I started to relax a little bit and be a little bit more calm, then we were in line and Levi said, "Mom, I have to pee. I'm peeing right now." So I pick him up and I just start running because we didn't bring an extra outfit. And I'm running to the bathroom and then all of a sudden I feel something wobbly under my feet and I stepped on a toddler. And needless to say, his parents were not happy with me. He was okay, but I'm apologizing and running to the bathroom and we're half peeing in the bathroom and half on me and on Levi. And then as soon as that ended, you know, my heart rate is back up again, up the roof. And then, you know, a couple hours later, I'm finally settling down. Maybe today could be okay. And our oldest daughter, Brinley, who was about 8, she had had too much cotton candy. So she asked to lay in her brother's stroller. Mm. And we're in a store and she's looking at these different Disney items. They're all over her lap. And then she just starts throwing up all over the merchandise. So I'm trying to pay for the puked merchandise with my phone while comforting her and then trying to call you. But I had 2% battery, of course. And then we finally make it back to the car. We're driving home and I'm sitting there thinking, how will I ever recover from today? This has taken years off of my life. Will I ever be okay? And then Eric looked at me and said, "All in all, today has been a really great day."
It felt like a great day.
And I looked at him and thought, who am I married to? And how do I become more like him? So marriage has many ups and many downs, and maybe you don't see eye to eye. But I think before we get into all that, it's important to look back at the origin of marriage and to note that marriage was God's idea first. And marriage is a gift from God that paints a picture of life with God. And it wasn't a human idea. Marriage wasn't a government idea. It was God's idea first. And we can actually read about the very first wedding and the very first marriage in Genesis chapter 2. And you'll see when you open up to Genesis chapter 2 that this first marriage, this first wedding happened before sin entered into the world in chapter 3. So this was God's original intention. And it says, starting in verse 18, "The Lord God said, 'It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him.' Now the Lord God had formed out of the ground all the wild animals and all the birds in the sky. He brought them to the man to see what he would name them. And whatever the man called each living creature, that was its name. So the man gave names to all the livestock, the birds in the sky, and all the wild animals. But for Adam, no suitable helper was found. So the Lord God caused the man to fall into a deep sleep. And while he was sleeping, he took one of the man's ribs and then closed up the place with flesh. Then the Lord God made a woman from the rib he had taken out of the man, and he brought her to the man. The man said, 'This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man.' That is why a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh. Adam and his wife were both naked, and they felt no shame."
You see, God makes it really crystal clear from the very beginning of the Bible that loneliness isn't good. And marriage isn't the only relational cure for loneliness. In fact, you can have deep and meaningful friendships. You have family within your church family, and that's for absolutely everyone. But marriage is one of God's most important gifts to combat loneliness. And the text tells us that God creates a suitable helper for Adam. Now, what does that phrase mean? Well, suitable helper is two Hebrew words. The first one is helper, which is the Hebrew word azer, which often is used to describe God himself, usually in terms of divine assistance or military aid. And the word suitable is the Hebrew word neged, which literally means like opposite him or matching him. So in other words, a suitable helper, an azer neged, is not a demeaning term, but a dignifying one. It's why Matthew Henry, the 18th century theologian and minister, when talking about this passage, he said these words: "The woman was not made out of the man's head to top him, not out of his feet to be trampled upon by him, but out of his side to be equal with him, under his arm to be protected, and near his heart to be beloved." You see, it's clear God's definition of marriage is one woman and one man for one lifetime, where the two become one and a new family is created. But maybe you're going, okay, that kind of sounds like some Hallmark romantic Valentine's Day love story when I think about the marriages that kind of surround me or that maybe even that I'm in right now. But I need you to know this. God hasn't given up on marriages. And you can have a better marriage. The secret ingredient is Jesus must lead the way. Which is why Sarah and I want to talk about today five biblical principles for having a better marriage. The first one is this. For a better marriage, keep Jesus at the center. In Hebrews chapter 12, the author writes, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us." And maybe at this moment you're going, okay, but how? How do we do that? This is what he says. Fixing our eyes on Jesus. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. You see, your spouse was never designed to be the person that you fix your eyes on. You see, this is one of the cultural lies of this moment right now, is we get so obsessed with our spouse or whoever we're in relationship with that our eyes are so fixed on them. If you want to have some like hashtag like relationship goals for your life, make this your goal. Fix your eyes on Jesus. Because think about this. If you and your spouse are both fixing your eyes on Jesus, you can move in the same direction together.
Well, by the way, Eric is really good at this because when we had been dating a while, we were driving one time and he just said to me, "Sarah, you have the most beautiful eyes." And I was kind of looking out this way and I don't know what made me say it, but I said, "Thank you. And do you know what color they are?"
Oh, really?
And he said, "Of course I do. Your beautiful blue eyes." And I was like, nope. And then he's like, "Oh, I meant green. You have the most beautiful green eyes." And then I kind of turned around and he was like, brown eyes. So I just think he was looking at Jesus so much he didn't have time to know, right?
That's nice. Here's the thing though. I was on a date with this amazing, beautiful, way out of my league woman and you're quizzing me on your eye color?
That like, wasn't nice.
Here's what we're kind of trying to get at. If we can show this triangle up on the screen, and maybe you could think about your relationship this way. If God is at the top and husband and wife are on the side, as you are moving closer to God, the byproduct is you'll actually move closer to each other, which is why it's so important. Don't ever fix your eyes on something that you could lose. Don't fix your eyes on your bank account, on your salary, on a relationship, on a career, on your children's behavior, because you can and you will lose all of those things. It's why as a dad, one thing I often have my kids repeat after me is I have them say this after me. Dad loves Jesus, dad loves mom, and dad loves me. I have them say that because I want them to know that my eyes are fixed on Jesus.
And Proverbs 29:18 says, "Where there is no vision, the people perish." I love this because it's just a reminder that every marriage needs a vision or a plan that's inspired by the gospel. Mm-hmm. And if husbands and wives choose to follow Christ's example, to die to themselves, to serve each other when they don't feel like it, and forgive each other and outdo each other in love, mm-hmm. when we do that, we will have Jesus at the center of our marriage and we'll be able to hear from him and do great things for him together.
Yeah, and there's a couple that we're close with, a married couple who three times in their marriage, they felt God calling them to give their car away. Not sell their car for money, but to literally give their car away. How does that happen? It only happens when Jesus is at the very center. And here's the thing about having a marriage where both of you have your eyes fixed on Jesus and he's at the center, is your spouse can now become someone who God uses to make you more Christ-like, to make you more holy. I remember when we first got here to Purpose Church after I had been here for about 6 months and I was just working so much and almost trying to prove myself and wasn't home a whole lot and was pretty just obsessed with ministry. I remember coming home from work one day and Sarah, in her very kind but assertive and honest way, she said, "Eric, I feel like you love the church more than you love me and the kids right now." And that was a really important turning point where Sarah was really speaking some truth that my priorities were a little out of whack. I remember when I spoke at my very first camp before we came here to Purpose Church. And when Sarah and I were driving home, I said, "How do you think that went?" And Sarah just said, "It was great. I felt like you preached with so much authority at that camp. And I feel like when we're back at home at church, you're not always preaching with that same authority." And that was a real turning point for me. And so if any of you ever feel like I'm preaching like a little too intense or a little too bold, you're like, "Hey, calm down, Eric." You can just thank this one, okay? Like, she's responsible for it.
And then number two, this is a fun one. For a better marriage, invest in your spouse. Proverbs 12:11 says, "Those who work their land will have abundant food, but those who chase fantasies have no sense." Mm. So we really want to ask you and ask ourselves today, where are we going to invest our energy? Mm. Will it be in our land or will it be in fantasies? Mm. And I think I used to read about how marriages took work and you needed to invest in each other. And that was before we were married. And I thought, oh, well, that's not really for us because we're really compatible and we're really good friends. But now, almost 15 years in, I see, oh, we need to choose to invest in one another.
That's right. And, you know, we've felt like we've discovered that the longer you're together, the harder it is to prioritize your marriage. I mean, we've all been around one of those cute couples that just started dating and they're talking on the phone all the time to each other. They're texting mm-hmm. each other. And, you know, we're thinking to ourselves, how do they get anything done? Like, how do they actually do anything with their lives? They're so obsessed with each other. And then what happens? You get engaged and all of a sudden you're not as focused on your relationship because you're planning a wedding. And then all of a sudden you get married and now you're managing a calendar and bills mm-hmm. and a schedule and your attention is divided maybe with your career. And then all of a sudden kids may come along and you can become so obsessed and focused on your kids that you actually forget your marriage in the process. It's possible to become so distracted and honestly so disconnected.
Mm-hmm. And last week, Pastor Glenn talked with us about change, and it was such a powerful sermon. And it was a reminder to me that change can be really hard, especially on marriages. Yeah. Change can be hard at any time, but when you're in a marriage, there's so many changes. And if you don't have a vision or you don't revisit your vision, it's hard to know how to go on from there. And I remember we were pregnant with our first son, Charlie, and we had only been married a couple years. And we went to this dinner and we were sitting around the table with a bunch of people, and they noticed I was pregnant and they started making jokes like, "Well, guess you won't have date nights anymore like this," or "Guess you'll never talk about anything but your kids," and all these comments. And we're driving home and I'm just crying.
I thought to myself, it was a great night. It was a great night. Been the theme of this. It was a great night.
Yeah, you didn't notice. But I'm crying and I tell him what I was feeling. And he said, "Well, why don't we come up with new vows?" Because we had come up with these vows for our wedding day, but now we were in a new sort of place in our relationship. So we wrote down these things like, okay, we're going to go on date nights and not just talk about the kids, or we're going to greet each other at the door with a hug. And then we typed it up and had our life group sign it for us so we could frame it and keep it in our room and look back at it. And there have been other times in our marriage where there's been changes and we've had to kind of revisit that or talk about those things again with each other. And then another practical thing that we do, and when we do it, things are going well for us, but we do something called Sunday night check-in. It doesn't have to be Sunday. It could be any night that works for you. But this is just a time for us to do a quick little budget meeting, to look at our calendar for the week ahead, and then my favorite part, to have a heart-to-heart. And in our heart-to-heart, we ask each other these questions. What are your hopes for this week? How can I love you well this week? And my favorite, what are you worried about this week? Mm. And it's not my favorite because I'm condoning worry. That's not good. But if there's something you're concerned about for the week, it's nice to share it with each other. Sometimes he just empathizes. But other times, practically, you'll say, "Oh, well, I can help you with that." And it just gives us this opportunity every week to encourage each other and to bear each other's burdens. And I love Galatians 6:2. It says, "Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ." Mm. And the original word that Paul uses here for burdens is weights. Mm. So if you can imagine, we're all carrying these weights, and as followers of Christ, it's our job to go up and remove some of those weights from people. And marriage is a great place to practice that, or anyone with friends to practice carrying away each other's weights. So I try to ask myself, what weight is Eric carrying, and how can I help carry some of that for him?
And we want to really take this moment to ask you the question, how does this apply to you? Or how could your conversations be even deeper, whether it's with your spouse or a close friend? And so maybe even take a moment here and pause and think about this question. What three questions do you want your spouse or closest friend to regularly ask you? Maybe these questions that we talk about aren't really that helpful for you, but what questions would you like the people closest in your life to ask you?
And it's a great idea to share this in community, share this in your life groups. When we'd only been married for a while, in our life group one night, the leaders of our group were having us talk about marriage, and for accountability and follow through, we were sharing with one another what would help the other person feel more loved. So when it got to be our turn, Eric said he wanted me to do something fun and with him, not just logistical, which I'm really good at. And then when it was my turn, I said, well, I want Eric to want to clean. Like, I want him to not just clean because I say it, can you help me, but to like initiate.
That's a prayer request right there. That's a prayer request.
But to my surprise, that Saturday, this was a Monday night, that Saturday I woke up and Eric was already standing there all ready for the day. And he said, do you know what today is? It's shiny Saturday. And I asked him what that was. And he said, well, it's the day we're going to clean until it shines. And he had a good attitude all day and made it fun. And then I invited him in the backyard of our apartment. I guess we'd be in the apartment at that time. And I said, do you want to help me or do you want to play ping pong with me? Mm. And we both look back at that day and it was just so fun.
Yeah.
It was so special.
We've never done another shiny Saturday since, but it was a good day.
We're going to
start
that.
Those up again after this sermon.
We're
so
revisit that. Well, it's really important to invest in your marriage and to love each other well. But one thing that anybody can do and that we should do in our marriages and in our relationships is encourage each other. Yeah. And this is so important, not just because it makes the other person feel good. So if you think of a compliment, say it. And that's important, but it's also because when we encourage each other, we are getting to play this special role in each other's lives to help soften each other's hearts. Yeah. And I love Hebrews 3:13. It says, encourage one another daily, as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. So husbands and wives and friends, we have this awesome opportunity to play a part in softening one another's hearts.
Yeah. I remember a couple months ago, we were at church and I was sitting in the front row and Pastor Glenn was preparing to get up and preach. And right before he was going up to preach, Kimberly, his wife, leaned over to him and she whispered something to him, but she was whispering a little bit loud so I could hear. So I was like, ooh, this is gonna be some good juicy something or something. So I was listening to what they had to say. And I'll never forget, Kimberly said three things to Glenn. She said this, she said, I love you. I'm excited to hear your sermon. And then she said this, she said, and you look so handsome. And I just thought to myself, that's exactly what every preacher needs to hear right before they get up to preach. You see, Kimberly takes very seriously that calling and that opportunity to encourage her husband. And you know, you never know how God's going to use your encouragement of your spouse in his perfect timing to say to them exactly what they need to hear. I remember we were at a camp once, and I was leading a group of guys, you were leading a group of girls, and all of us guys had been praying that day, God, would you show us how much you love us? And at the end of the day, Sarah came up to me and she gave me this watercolor that I keep in my Bible. And she said, I painted this for you. And it just says, I'll always pick you. And one, I was just so touched that Sarah made this for me, but it reminded me that God will always pick me. And it was just the encouragement that I needed. Now, another way that you can invest in your marriage, and we're about to get PG-13 here for just a moment. Another way that you can invest in your marriage is through sex. That sex is an important way to invest in your marriage. It's an important part of a healthy marriage between a husband and a wife. In Song of Songs, chapter 7, verse 6, it says, how beautiful you are and how pleasing my love with your delights. Your stature is like that of palm and your breasts like clusters of fruit. I said, I will climb the palm tree. I will take hold of its fruit. May your breasts be like clusters of grapes on the vine, the fragrance of your breath like apples, and your mouth like the best wine. May the wine go straight to my beloved, flowing gently over lips and teeth. I belong to my beloved and his desire is for me. Come, my beloved, let us go to the countryside. Let us spend the night in the villages. Let us go early to the vineyards to see if the vines have budded, if their blossoms have opened, and if the pomegranates are in bloom. There I will give you my love. And you thought the Bible was boring, right? You didn't expect that. That's literally in the Bible. You see, sex is God's idea. It's his idea within the context of a relationship between a husband and a wife. And sex is not, how can I get what I want from my spouse? Sex is, how can I love and serve my spouse in a way that will bring us together? You see, sex isn't the glue of a relationship. It's the celebration of that relationship.
That's good. And another really important way to invest in your marriage is to get plugged into our marriage resources right here at Purpose Church. Mm. My hero and friend, Pastor Lisa, she heads up our marriage ministry here. And there are so many classes and resources that are available. So remember, great marriages don't happen on accident. They take a lot of work, but Purpose Church is here to help you and to support you. So there are quarterly marriage series that you can sign up for. And there's also mentoring for couples. And that's where we would pair you up with a seasoned couple who would meet regularly with you to pray for you, whether you're engaged or married or a little bit behind on the journey than this couple, and they would be there to support you, encourage you, and counsel you. So maybe you're thinking, I would love to be a marriage mentor. Mm. I have gone through some things and I have a heart to help. Mm. Or maybe you're someone who would love to be paired up. If that's you or you want to check out any of our resources, you can go to purposechurch.com/marriage.
Yeah, and another way you can invest in your marriage might be through marriage counseling. That Sarah and I have gone to a lot of marriage counseling. It has been so helpful for us. If a tune-up or a full rebuild is needed, don't delay. Go today. Marriage counseling has been just incredibly beneficial for us. And I remember our therapist, he said to us once that most married couples go to counseling 3 years too late. And what he was trying to say was most couples go when they're just kind of wanting to check off a box. Hey, we tried counseling. And so maybe your marriage isn't in a horrible place, but you just know you need a little extra help or a third party that can kind of help you get to a stronger place. We want to encourage you to consider going to marriage counseling. Now, when we think about this section of For a Better Marriage, invest in your spouse, I felt the best way to end it was to talk about Pastor Gene. So Pastor Gene is one of our pastors of our senior and adult care here at Purpose Church. And this is him and his amazing, beautiful wife, Lori, on their wedding day, October 21st, 1978. Don't they just look so amazing? Beautiful. I love it. Check out that suit. Wow. That's a good one. I asked Gene when he when they were celebrating their 40th anniversary, our staff took time to celebrate them. And I remember I asked Gene, I said, Pastor Gene, you've been married 40 years. You have a godly marriage of 40 years. What's the secret? What's the trick? And then what he told me, honestly, I wasn't prepared for. He said, you know, Eric, he said, Lori and I, we are such different people. We're best friends, but we're such different people. And she has her TV shows that she likes, and I don't really care for them too much. And I have my TV shows that I like, and she doesn't really care for them. And then he said this, and he said, but you know what? We watch each other's TV shows together. And I kind of just stared at him for a moment. I said, you have a Bible verse? Do you have some kind of like that? That's it, Gene? And then I thought about it and I was like, that's really profound. Mm. That Gene and Lori for now over 40 years have modeled investing in each other at every level, every detail, dying to themselves for the other. Well, good. Number three, for a better marriage, forgive before you feel like it. Mm. The Apostle Paul said in Ephesians 4:32, be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other just as in Christ God forgave you. You see, Paul didn't say forgive each other when you feel like it or forgive each other when you want to, but forgive each other because Christ has forgiven you. You see, here's the beauty of a Christian marriage is that you don't have to rely on your own feelings or your own desires to forgive and to restore the marriage or the relationship, that we have Christ as our example and he is the fuel. In the same way that he has forgiven us, now we have the ability with his power and strength to forgive our spouse. And the reality is if you've been married a long time, it just means that you're a master in forgiveness. Because within our marriage, even though we've only been married 15 years, we've hurt each other. There have been some things that we've said that have really hurt each other. And the truth is, I am not a perfect husband. And Sarah is, She's a perfect wife, okay? She's basically a perfect wife, but she has to deal with me, and I'm not a perfect husband, no, and that's challenging for you.
I'm not a perfect wife either, and one thing we say when we are not perfect, which is all the time, I borrowed this from an author that I love, Jeannie Cunyon, but we say we are a house of confession and not perfection. We say that all the time in our house because confessing to the Lord and to each other should really be a daily part of our walk with Christ as Christ followers, because we're humans, and we do mess up, but forgiveness is so hard, especially I think in a marriage, because forgiveness is letting go of something that you've been holding on to so tightly, or something that has hurt you so much, and you really requires a letting go. And I remember recently we were in an argument that was way too late at night, so we were both way too tired, and I just sort of, I don't remember what it was about, but I dramatically marched out of the room and circled the hallway, and I was just, it's a matter of time till he comes and apologizes as I'm out here, and he didn't come. And so I'm like, well, I'll go inside and settle the matter. And I go inside, and guess what? He is sleeping like a baby.
It was a long day. It was a long day. It had been a long day.
I know. So in the morning, though, we both decided to forgive each other before we felt like it,
yes,
and to talk it through. Yes. And so, you know, storms and struggles and having to forgive each other is a normal part of marriage. And that's what we're talking about next, is number four. For a better marriage, look for Jesus in the storms. It's not if you go through storms in your marriage or in your life, it's when, right? So when we had been married for 8 years, we were at Hume Lake with all the high schoolers here.
Which is always the dream, right? On your wedding anniversary, to be with a couple hundred high schoolers. That's the dream, right?
We love it. It was so fun. But Eric said, why don't we come up with eight great things that God has done over the last 8 years in our marriage? And so we just put it on my notepad on my phone, and we're writing them down. And then we were so surprised to look at the list and notice that six out of the eight things were really hard things. Yeah. They were storms. They were things that at the time we were kind of praying away or wishing we weren't going through. And, you know, there were things like our daughter's heart surgery. And we had, at our last church, we had a student who was removed from his home, and he lived with us for about a month. And that was just a hard time. But looking back, these were the times where God just shone, and where he brought us together, and he showed us new tender sides of his mercy. And we were thankful for those times. So I wanted to ask you today, church, are you in a storm? I think many of us are in some sort of storm, maybe a big one or a little one. And if you are, I just want to remind you that God will not leave you alone in that storm. You never suffer in the dark. He is always with you. And number two, if we let him, he will use those storms for his glory. So whatever you're doing, whether you're married, you're trying to navigate a marriage, or you're a parent, or you're a student, or you're a volunteer here at Purpose Church, or you're a Sunday school teacher, or a business owner, whatever it is that God has called you to do, he has not called you to do it alone. That same resurrecting power that raised Jesus from the dead is in us when we believe, and we can just tether our hearts onto him and lean back into his arms when we're going through that storm. One thing I just keep thinking about is the Apostle John, the one Jesus loved. He introduced himself as that because that was his identity, being so loved by Jesus. But one thing I just noticed this year when I was reading John chapter 13 is he is leaning back against Jesus during the Last Supper, just leaning on him. And so that's something that we can all do. No matter what storm we're in, we can lean back and trust Jesus with that storm. And I love Jeremiah 33:3. It says, call to me and I will answer you and tell you great unsearchable things you do not know. Some of us, we just need to say, God, help me with this marriage. Help me with this storm, and speak to me about it. James 1:5, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all who ask without finding fault, and it will be given to you. We can all ask him for wisdom. We don't have to do this alone. In fact, we're commanded not to do this alone. So if you are in a storm, I just want to remind you, lean back on Jesus, trust him, keep your eyes on him, and ask him for his wisdom.
And when you're in one of those storms, or you're in an argument or a fight, I want to encourage you to not use the forbidden words. So the forbidden words are never and always, because when you say to your spouse, you never ... or you always ... one, it's never true. They don't never or always. And really, you're trying to hurt them in that process, and it's not going to bring about any kind of reconciliation or healing. In Proverbs chapter 15, verse 1, it says, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. You see, how you say something is just as important as what you say.
so true. And sometimes it's not the big storms in life, but it's just those little annoyances that are kind of difficult. We were at a wedding a couple weeks ago and we were all dressed up. Eric was in a suit and I had this long dress, and we came home and our sweet Grammy, his mom, was watching our kiddos, and I figured they'd be asleep. But we walk in the door and our son Levi had thrown up all over his bed. And so Eric, you had the trash bag and I had the Clorox wipes, and we're in these nice outfits and we're just like, ooh, cleaning it up. And then we go outside and we're hosing the mattresses. And then Eric just started like singing this song. And I was kind of looking at him thinking, there's no one else on planet Earth I would rather clean up vomit with than you.
Right. And that's why at this point in the sermon, we've like waited this long. This is like the deep and profound moment of the sermon. Okay. Are you ready for it? So if you've been asleep or have been checked out, whatever, like come back with us, come back here. This is the most deep, profound thing you're going to hear all day. Okay, here we go. Here it is. Marry someone you want to clean up vomit with. Okay, that's it. Like, that's our nugget for you. Like, that's what we got. But really, there's maybe something even a little bit deeper to it. It's this. Don't just, if you're thinking about marrying someone, don't just pick somebody who you're attracted to right now or who you have some chemistry with, but envision life with them 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the road. Do you share the same convictions about who God is? Are you aligned on the purpose that God has for your life? Do they have a thriving relationship with Jesus? And ultimately, are they going to be someone that you want to go through some of the hardest things with?
But actually, the most profound advice is this next one, right? Yep. Number five, for a better marriage, do the most important thing, pray together. So wives, husbands, friends, anybody praying for the people in our lives, and wives and husbands praying for your spouses, that is the only gift that we can give someone that will last forever and that will impact eternity. We have this power to cover each other in prayer. This summer, I found my mom's journal that she had given me when I was little, or she had written it when I was little. And when I was 1.5, our family, we were in a car wreck, and my dad and my older sister both passed away. And my mom kept a journal during that time, and I just read it this summer. And the beginning, she's lamenting and wondering if we'll ever be okay and if I'll ever be normal. I had some injuries. She had some injuries. And then the second half of the journal, she just pours out her heart to the Lord. And she writes these prayers like, I pray that Sarah will know you someday and that she'll have community and that she'll be okay. And I'm reading these prayers just weeping. So I called her and I said, Mom, what if you hadn't have written these prayers? Would I be in this community? Would I know the Lord like I do? And she didn't really remember writing the prayer. So sometimes we don't even remember, right, all the time that we've spent in prayer for one another, writing our prayers or praying. But we have this gift that's not going away. It's a great investment of our time to pray for one another.
Yeah, and I remember a couple weeks ago when Pastor Glenn and Kimberly preached on marriage, and that was just such a powerful sermon. You got to go back and watch that. One of the verses that they mentioned just stuck with me, and I wanted to just take a minute to revisit it again because I think it's so important. In 1 Peter 3:7, it says, husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect as the weaker partner. Now, he's talking about in physical strength, not in leadership or spiritually, as heirs with you of the gracious gift of life, so that nothing will hinder your prayers. There's a big idea here, and it's this. You cannot be good with God and at the same time, not be good to your wife. You can't have a strong relationship with God and be disrespectful, inconsiderate, disregarding your wife at the same time. God is not okay with that.
That's powerful. And prayer also works against a stubborn husband. There was a time when I was bringing up all the time, what if we ate healthier? What if we exercise? And it didn't really feel like it was landing so much. So I just went to the Holy Spirit and I was praying and praying. And then at some point you said, you know, I just have this idea. I think I want to live a long life. I think we should exercise together as a family, remember?
I remember that.
I sort of felt like God was maybe stirring my heart to spend a season homeschooling, and I was excited about it, but...
And I honestly, I thought homeschooling was weird. Like, I just thought it was weird, and then now, you know, we're a homeschooling family, and it's just what's working for us right now in the season, but we're seeing so much fruit from it. I mean, it's been amazing. And God really changed my heart through your prayers,
right.
I think.
That was all God, right? So we have a really exciting invitation for you all today. We wanted to tell you that there is a 31-day prayer challenge that we want to all take together starting tomorrow. And Eric and I are going to take this challenge too. We love this book by Jody Burnt called Praying the Scriptures for Your Marriage. And she has this 31-day prayer challenge where there's one thing to pray each day. So if you're married, you can pray that for your spouse and you can pray together. Mm. If you're not married, pray that for the married couples in your life. And it's so exciting to think about what God will do with that if we as a church all take this marriage challenge. But maybe you're thinking, okay, that sounds too simple. Prayer, is that really going to change my marriage? But I just want to remind you that any lasting change or growth in your marriage or the marriages around us will only happen with God and with His power. So I just want to ask the question, what would it look like? And what would happen if our whole church, everybody watching, if we all took that challenge, we prayed for each other, we prayed for the marriages around us, I think we would have some really strong marriages and we would be really dangerous for the kingdom of heaven if we all sign up for this. So let's do it.
And so we have the QR code, would encourage you to check that out and consider joining us and the Marriages of Purpose Church and everyone at Purpose Church to pray intentionally together. It's going to be awesome. I remember a couple years ago, I was listening to this seasoned pastor talk, and he said, you know, he used to give married couples all this advice. Here's 12 things to do. Try this. And then he said he finally got to the point where he would just tell married couples, pray together. Mm-hmm. He was just saying pray together because he felt like that was the thing that moved the needle the most. Because oftentimes when a couple prays together, they're more likely to stay together. Well, as we kind of wrap up this sermon, I felt like there was one last question that we needed to talk about, and it's this. What if I'm single? Or what if my marriage fell apart or is falling apart? Or what if I lost my spouse? You see, our culture is so obsessed with sexual relationships and who's dating who. And at times, we've even made an idol out of marriage, as if your marital status is the most important thing about you. But the Christian worldview doesn't end with some people married and some people single, or some people happy and others miserable, or even husbands and wives running into heaven together and all the single people walking in alone. The truth is, for Christians, the end of the world culminates in a wedding that every Christ follower is invited to be a part of, where Jesus is the groom and the church is His forever bride. In the last book of the Bible, Revelation chapter 21, it says, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and He will dwell with them. They will be His people, and God Himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away.' He who was seated on the throne said, 'I am making all things new.' Then he said, 'Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true.'" You see, it's really tempting to think, if I had that person back, or if they never left, or if I found Mr. or Mrs. Right, I would be happy forever and I wouldn't cry and I wouldn't have any more pain in my life. But the truth is, and Sarah, please don't say amen to this, but here's the truth. Jesus is the only perfect husband. Mm. Jesus is the only perfect companion. He's the only perfect friend. And we, the church, every Christian is His bride. God's Spirit is preparing us now to be forever united with Jesus, where all pain and sorrow and loss will come to an end and will be completely replaced by joy and love beyond our wildest comprehension. So if there's pain in your heart after a message like today's, or if you've lost a spouse or your own marriage fell apart or is falling apart as we speak, I hope these three truths will encourage you. Number one, Jesus is with you in your pain. Number two, Jesus can give you joy today. And number three, Jesus will one day make all things new. And that's a better way.